animals to go extinct. It was truly enormous. An adult could reach lengths of nearly 30 feet and weigh 10 tons. But we are acquainted with it only because in 1741, a Russian expedition happened to be shipwrecked on the only place where the creatures still survived in any numbers, the remote and foggy Commander Islands in the Bering Sea. Happily, the expedition had a naturalist, George Steller, who was fascinated by the animal. He took the most copious notes, says Flannery. He even measured the diameter of its whiskers. The only thing he wouldn't describe was the male genitals, though for some reason he was happy enough to do the females. He even saved a piece of skin, so we had a good idea of its texture. We weren't always so lucky. The one thing Stella couldn't do was save the sea cow itself. Already hunted to the brink of extinction, it would be gone altogether within 27 years of Stella's discovery of it. Many other animals, however, couldn't be included because too little is known about them. The Darling Downs hopping mouse, Chatham Island's swan, Ascension Island flightless crake, at least five types of large turtle, and many others are forever lost to us except as names. A great deal of extinction, Flannery and Shuten discovered, hasn't been cruel or wanton, but just kind of majestically foolish. In 1894, when a lighthouse was built on a lonely rock called Stephen's Island in the tempestuous strait between the North and South Islands of New Zealand, the lighthouse keeper's cat kept bringing him strange little birds that it had caught. The keeper dutifully sent some specimens to the museum in Wellington. There, a curator grew very excited because the bird was a relic species of flightless wrens, the only example of a flightless perching bird ever found anywhere. He set off at once for the island, but by the time he got there, the cat had killed them all. 12 stuffed museum species of the Stephen's Island flightless wren are all that now exist. At least we have those. All too often, it turns out, we are not much better at looking after species after they have gone than we were before they went. Take the case of the lovely Carolina parakeet, emerald green with a golden head. It was arguably the most striking and beautiful bird ever to live in North America. Parrots don't usually venture so far north, as you may have noticed. And at its peak, it existed in vast numbers, exceeded only by the passenger pigeon. But the Carolina parakeet was also considered a pest by farmers, and easily hunted because it flocked tightly and had a peculiar habit of flying up at the sound of gunfire, as you would expect, but then returning almost at once to check on fallen comrades. In his classic American Ornithology, written in the early 19th century, Charles Wilson Peel describes an occasion in which he repeatedly empties a shotgun into a tree in which they roost. At each successive discharge, though showers of them fell, yet the affection of the survivors seemed rather to increase, for after a few circuits around the place, they again alighted near me, looking down on their slaughtered companions with such manifest symptoms of sympathy and concern as entirely disarmed me. By the second decade of the 20th century, the birds had been so relentlessly hunted that only a few remained alive in captivity. The last one, named Inca, died in the Cincinnati Zoo in 1918, not quite 4 years after the last passenger pigeon died in the same zoo, and was reverently stuffed. And where would you go to see poor Inca now? Nobody knows. The zoo lost it. What is both most intriguing and puzzling about the story above is that Peel was a lover of birds, and yet did not hesitate to kill them in large numbers for no better reason than that it interested him to do so. It is a truly astounding fact that for the longest time the people who were most intensely interested in the world's living things were the ones most likely to extinguish them. No one represented this position on a larger scale, in every sense, than Lionel Walter Rothschild, the second Baron Rothschild. Scion of the great banking family, Rothschild was a strange and reclusive fellow. He lived his entire life in the nursery wing of his home at Tring in Buckinghamshire, using the furniture of his childhood, even sleeping in his childhood bed, though eventually he weighed 300 pounds. His passion was natural history, and he became a devoted accumulator of objects. He sent hordes of trained men, as many as 400 at a time, to every quarter of the globe to clamber over mountains and hack their way through jungles in the pursuit of new specimens, particularly things that flew. These were crated or boxed up and sent back to Rothschild's estate at Tring, where he and a battalion of assistants exhaustively logged and analysed everything that came before them, producing a constant stream of books, papers and monographs, some 1,200 in all. Altogether, Rothschild's Natural History Factory processed well over 2 million specimens and added 5,000 species of creature to the scientific archive. Remarkably, Rothschild's collecting efforts were neither the most extensive nor the most generously funded of the 19th century. That title almost certainly belongs to a slightly earlier, but also very wealthy British collector named Hugh Cumming, who became so preoccupied with accumulating objects that he built a large ocean-going ship and employed a crew to sail the world full-time, picking up whatever they could find, birds, plants, animals of all types, and especially shells. It was his unrivaled collection of barnacles that passed to Darwin and served as the basis for his seminal study. However, Rothschild was easily the most scientific collector of his age, though also the most regrettably lethal, for in the 1890s he became interested in Hawaii, perhaps the most temptingly vulnerable environment Earth has yet produced. Millions of years of isolation had allowed Hawaii to evolve 8,800 unique species of animals and plants. Of particular interest to Rothschild were the island's colorful and distinctive birds, often consisting of very small populations inhabiting extremely specific ranges. The tragedy for many Hawaiian birds was that they were not only distinctive, desirable, and rare, a dangerous combination in the best of circumstances, but also often heartbreakingly easy to take. The great Koa finch, an innocuous member of the honey creeper family, lurked shyly in the canopies of koa trees. But if someone imitated its song,